Hey, y'all. How you doing? This is Sharon and Lucy back with you with the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by the Chemo Girls. And I just had to say, hey, y'all, because we got our friend Karen Shea on the line today, and that's her term. That's her good Nashville term that she introduced the National Women's Survivors Conference with recently up in Nashville. It was a good old Southern welcome. So I had to open the show with that today.
Of course, of course. And let me tell you guys just a little bit about Miss Karen. She spent over 20 years as a healthcare administrator, where she's focused exclusively on development and management of healthcare facilities. Most importantly, she is a survivor of two different kinds of cancer, with her first diagnosis at the age of 20. And Miss Karen, you don't look much older than 20 now.
I know it. I'm so jealous.
Oh, my goodness.
The diagnosis made her understand from both sides of the desk, as she says, the importance of proper treatment, resources, and a positive mental attitude as both a worker in society, a patient, as a woman. She became a frequent speaker at many cancer events throughout the United States, and through those efforts saw the lack of resources available for specific issues related to cancer care. In the beginning, it was about children. In 2003, Karen founded Billy's Wish, a nonprofit which helps children fight cancer through entertainment and educational programs. It provides age-appropriate materials to help children deal with the disease and what they will face through the colorful world of animation using DVDs, CDs, and coloring books. The materials are distributed free of charge to children with cancer and are available online and through hospitals in the United States. It was that route and her passion for cancer patients that took her in yet another direction. In 2011, and after 5 years of research and strategic planning, and with the help of women survivors across the nation, Karen launched the National Women's Survivor Convention. This was done through the Women's Survivor Alliance. It's a 501c3, and also created by Karen, whose mission is to transform survivorship from a mood into a movement by empowering, educating, and connecting women whose lives have been touched by cancer. The purpose? It's to establish a network where women affected by cancer can find their voice, improve their quality of life, and embrace their new normal. She decided to launch this effort in Nashville at the first convention ever held in history for women survivors. The event took place at the Gaylord Opry Resort in Nashville, of course, and this happened just 6 weeks ago, I guess, in August, and we were there. We loved it. We had approximately 1,000 women cancer survivors from every type of survivorship, not just breast cancer. Women of every survivorship made their way from around the globe to participate in this historic event. And from this one effort, Karen now leads the charge to create a global movement for women survivors via national and international marketing. Now, Miss Karen, I know that you have been interviewed. You have involvement with many different hospitals. There are so many different things here that I'm seeing. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you feel like the listeners would need to know just in terms of involvement?
First of all, hey, y'all.
Hey.
As we learned at the convention, you know, you got to string out that hot y'all.
Hey, y'all.
And
we can do that.
We're still working on some folks.
We can do that in the South, can't we?
So.
Huh? We have permission. Yeah, we got to work on those Michigan girls.
Yes. Well, obviously, I live in Nashville. I mean, if you can't tell by the accent. But thank you for allowing me to be on the show today and to talk about a very important topic, which is survivorship.
Uh-huh.
And I think, from my perspective, it goes without saying that as a healthcare administrator, you're faced with many, many obstacles that one has to face when they're running a healthcare facility, particularly when they are, you know, looking at budgets and you're looking at programs that you can have and that you can't have. And at the end of the day, as an administrator, you know, you have to hit numbers. And sometimes that doesn't work, though, in the world of survivorship, because while administration is very much about numbers, survivorship and going through cancer is not. Mm-hmm. It is very much about the emotion and the shock and what you have to do to go through your life as a cancer patient / survivor. And I had the opportunity to experience it on both sides of the desk and had an opportunity to share that at an event not too long ago where you know, I could explain the differences from the different sides of the desk. And as we go through a really tough time right now in healthcare and a lot of questions, I think it's important for folks to keep in mind that we're always looking for that end result. And sometimes we don't have people that really do that. And people who have gone through cancer themselves are more sensitive to the end result.
Oh, yeah.
And what I wanted to do as a healthcare administrator is to be the best, to have the best healthcare facility for the patient. And as a survivor, though, I flipped. I wanted to go to the best place where I could achieve my goals of being a survivor. And a lot of survivor programs just weren't there. And we're coming into a fabulous time of a greater awareness about survivorship. And I was 20 years old when I was first diagnosed, and I celebrated 25 years this year.
Yay.
It's my 25 years. I'm working on 26.
Congratulations.
And I had a very long road. I was at stage three, borderline stage four, and it was a very scary time in my life.
Yeah.
I was, you know, that was 25 years ago, and cancer research has come so far since that time. And as I looked at survivorship programs, they were basically non-existent. And the opportunity to be able to take a concept of bringing together women. And being a woman, I kind of was a little bit of an expert on that. So we could work together to bring women with the same issues and create a program around the concept of women's survivorship. And thus, why Women's Survivors Alliance was created. And that's why the convention was created. You know, the convention in Nashville, the National Women's Survivors Convention, was 5 years of research.
Yeah.
First two and a half years was research, logo creation. What do you want to do? How do we want to vision this? Going and traveling to many conventions. And many conventions were very sterile and were very conceptually scientific. And I wanted a place where women could go and women could network, where companies could come and say, look at what we have to offer for you. My goal, my end result, was I did not want a woman to leave that event with one question in her mind of where to go next. And I hope that we have achieved that goal. And each year it'll be more fun and more challenging at the same time. To create a venue where women can leave with answers.
Yeah.
And they also will leave with friends. And they will leave with a new network, a new community. And with a little bit of a different flavor, gals.
Yeah.
I think you will say and the event was not traditional.
I know. And I think you and Judy really achieved what your mission was.
I do too.
It was a phenomenal event. And it was a true time of celebration of being a survivor. And you did it.
Yeah.
You girls did it. Well, a little bit about your own story, Karen, with your facing the big C word. First of all, how would you describe yourself before your diagnosis, before you knew that you had cancer?
Besides incredibly young.
Yes. And beautiful.
I was an overachiever. When I speak, I tell the story. At age 16, I graduated high school. At age 17, I was going to my junior year of college. At age 19, I met the man that was going to be my husband. And at age 20, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Wow.
I was an overachiever. I was an overachiever by many means. I was also incredibly athletic.
Mm-hmm.
I was someone that had everything going for her. I had an incredible family network. My grandmother, who I actually named my company after, her name was Charlotte, and she had breast cancer. So I got to experience firsthand when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. My grandfather had passed away. So my mother we lived right next door, very, very southern. Everybody lives on the same road, everybody lives on the same road. So I was living right next to my grandmother, and she was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was my first experience with cancer. I had no idea what she was going through. I knew her hair was falling out, and the one thing I wanted to do every day is to roll what little hair she had.
Oh.
That was our time. That was my grandmother's time.
Yeah.
And that was very important. Oh, I get so emotional still thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But my family decided at that point, even though it was just next door, that the best thing for me to do is to move in with my grandmother. And I did. Of course, I mean, you just walked, literally, you didn't even walk across the street. You just jumped a little fence. And, I was right there. I mean, you could throw a rock and hit each other's house.
I love it.
So I was able to live there and to experience that. And what she taught me in such a very short amount of time, she fought breast cancer not once but twice.
Mm.
Which ultimately took her life. I'm very, very grateful she was in her 70s before the beast came after her.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did growing up next to this incredible woman who was full of courage and full of passion and full of life and taught me to shoot a gun,
mm-hmm.
to be honest, a shotgun, to watch for bears, because I lived in
Boondockville. Oh, my goodness. I love it.
Yeah, what I learned from her was an immense amount of courage. I learned from her an immense amount of passion. And dealing with her and watching her fight with cancer on a personal level, and again, I was young when she was diagnosed. I was 16. She still went to my graduation. She still did she went to my first day of college with me. She rode down with me to my first day of college and just sat while I went in at 16 years old and went, I don't know what to do. I'm out of my... And I would go back, sit in the car, and she would look at me and she'd say, so you're scared, what's your problem?
I love it.
Learning that kind of courage and learning that kind of passion and that drive, that's who I became, but I owe that to her. And that's what my life was about. And so when I was diagnosed with cancer at a very young age, I was in shock. I was like, seriously? I have no family history of ovarian or uterine. We did have breast cancer in the family, but I had no history. And I was a incredible piece of help and an overachiever. So mm-hmm. getting diagnosed was like, are you kidding?
Yeah, yeah.
And having it so advanced was really, really tough. So I fought for several years, went through some treatments, and tried to keep my ovaries and my uterus because I wanted to try to have a child. And back then, things were very, very different than they are now. And ultimately, it didn't work. I had a hysterectomy at 25 years old. I finally had a hysterectomy, and it just didn't work. And so then I went through this survival stage, but I was dealing with the loss of ability to have a child.
Yeah.
I was dealing with the loss of, trying to figure out who I am and being thrown into menopause at such a young age. You're going, hello, this is quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
There were no survivorship programs. And basically I said, you know what, at the end of the day, I was my grandmother's survivorship program. And that's what I need to be able to do. And because of her courage and because of her strength, we just kept going. And I managed to get through it and ironically became a healthcare administrator during the entire process.
Amazing.
So I stayed with that for a very long time until I said, there's an opportunity, survivorship's moving forward. And, we have an opportunity to create an amazing program through the Alliance, through the Women Survivors Alliance. And so that's kind of where I am.
Well, listen, that's an amazing story. I tell you, my grandmother just had a really profound impact on my life. I lost her, I guess it's been 4 or 5 years ago now. She was 94. And she had a 38 special chromed out that she slept under her, it was right under her mattress. And she was hanging the laundry out on the line and feeding the cows with the golf cart right up until it all just fell apart for her physically. But these strong women, you know, have mentored us, have poured into us. And I think we do have a responsibility for those who are looking bewildered behind us to pull them forward with the same strength. And I love to hear that story.
I just pray that I'm able to leave this this great earth one day with a legacy like that, like your grandmother's.
Oh, yeah, me
Karen,
too.
It's just beautiful story.
It is a beautiful story. Something that I wanted to ask you is, how were you diagnosed? I mean, I know it was just such a young age. So how were you diagnosed?
No one believed me. I remember my plumbing was never right from the get-go, to be completely honest. And I would go to doctors who would say, oh, well, you know, it's just who you are. Oh, well, you're just athletic, so things don't quite happen like normal women, you know, normal monthly cycles happen.
Right.
Oh, well, you just experience some, you know, let me just, and this one was my favorite, let me just put you on the pill so you get regular, and then when we do that, then life will be easier.
Right.
Well, getting put on the pill doesn't really help any cancer growth.
That's
it just accelerates. So it took me 8 doctors to where I finally called one, and it's so funny. He was actually a friend of mine, and I said, something seriously wrong with me. I am not mental. I know I'm young, but something's really wrong. And that's when we began the long process. And of course, it was found out that I had cancer. And there you go. But no one believed me at such a young age.
Had you not been,
it's different now.
Yeah, had you not been so proactive,
sweetie, I don't know.
We wouldn't even have you with us today. You know,
I was 34, and they did not believe me either.
Right.
They just said, you're young, you're healthy, you know, you eat well, you know, don't you think those are fibroids? So I totally get that part of it. I didn't have to go through so many doctors. I hate to hear that you did. But I think it's less common now than it used to be. But I think that we have an idea of what healthy looks like. And it's hard to look past. So let's talk about that moment of diagnosis. Like, you know, I was saying with Miss Judy, I remember the second the words came out of his mouth that said, you know, you have cancer and it's aggressive and blah, blah, blah. And then kind of the muffled Peanuts teacher's voice came, you know, wah, 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 wah. And everything I was thinking retreated, and there was this echoing silence in my head, and things started shifting and changing inside of me. What changed in you at that moment?
Well, I can tell you this. The color of his carpet was gray. The color of the chair that I was sitting in was beige. It was overcast outside, and it was a piece, he was a piece of fuzz to me. And all you heard was wah, wah, wah. I get that. And I've learned that that's primarily most of the time the case. It's afterwards that you have to go home and sit down and go, okay, so who am I? Well, what's interesting is that the same thing happens when you're done with treatment. And when you're done with treatment and you get your cupcake and you leave and you go home and you sit down on the side of the bed, you go, okay.
What now? What now?
Who am I?
Yeah.
Because as women, being, you know, most women who, you know, we just do it. We just go through what we have to go through, and we do the best we can, and we fight really hard. And no matter what the prognosis is, we really fight hard. That's just who we are.
That's right.
And who God created us to be.
That's right.
But at the end of the day, what I think hits us equally as hard is the after you're done and you go home and you've got to rebuild your life. And now you've got to rebuild it with the word C attached to you.
Yeah.
And while we have a lot of pride in that, we also have a lot of issues that survivors face, from financial to family dynamics, sexuality.
Yeah.
You face so much stuff. And those are the kinds of things that begin to mull through your head when you're sitting on the side of the bed.
That's right.
Because as women, we are expected to get up, dust ourselves off, and go on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's who we are, and that's who we traditionally have become in society. you know, a pretty powerful gender. So we're, but at the same time, there's so many emotions, not just physical, but also emotional issues that we go through. And I recall just going through that. And I threw myself into some cancer work, but at the same time, I also was a administrator, again, on the other side of the desk now, going, well, you know, why don't we have better programs?
Yeah.
Why don't we have this? I will tell you, cancer did not make me a better administrator. It made me a worse one. I stopped being a bean counter, and I became an emotional woman on the other
side. But I think we need to understand that emotion on that other side of the clinical desk, too. That's one thing I think we run into in our work with other women is just them not feeling like their doctors and their administrators are real connected to them emotionally. You know, we know that they do a beautiful job saving our lives, but, you know, do they understand what we're going through? You know,
right, the whole process, the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Karen, can you, as we wrap up today, can you just leave our listeners with maybe one of the most helpful tricks of the trade? When you're going through treatment and you're going through all the different facets of side effects and, you know, it's just a hard time to go through. What comes up as one of those things that you remember about your process that could help someone today?
When I was going through treatment and when I was getting close to being done, I remember thinking, who can I be? You know, and even though you go home and you sit down with your cupcake when you're done with treatment and you're going, okay, what's life all about? I would encourage anyone to realize that while cancer is not a gift by any means, it is an opportunity to change what you're doing and who you are. I'm not a Pollyanna in that if you want to become an American Idol after cancer, you should go become American Idol. That doesn't always work that way. But what does work is that you really sit down and you look at who you are, look at your talents, look at your resources, and look and plan on what I think will become your second act. And that is, once cancer is over, you are a member of a club. You can't, you will no longer not be a part of it.
You can't take yourself out.
When you never wanted to be a member of that club, you are. So take that plan and think about what you can do with your life. And that, I think, helps people get through it. And communicate. Communicate to your family. Family meetings, sitting around going, okay, my life is going to change after this. Mm-hmm. How do we as a family unit make this work? No matter what, no matter who your family is, you know, no matter, and family includes friends and loved ones.
Yeah.
Plan that.
Because they're not
going to. Think about what you're going to do when you're done.
Right. Right. And I think that is one thing that we lack. A lot of us lack that ability to sit down and let's talk about this. Let's just face this thing. Let's don't pretend like it's not here. Let's don't just wait until it's end and then try to get back to life. Let's just hit it face on. And that is very, very wonderful wisdom to give our listeners today, especially our listeners out there that are new to the process and, you know, facing some of these dilemmas. But just communicate is a beautiful pearl of wisdom to give today, Karen. So,
the last thing we'll ask of you, sweetie, is do you have a not just surviving but thriving tidbit of the day for our listeners?
I have to go back with what I just said. Thriving is such a beautiful word. And again, if you haven't sat down and you haven't thought what you want to do and what you want to be with your life,
now is
the time to do it. And I love the saying, and it's in the office, it's in the Survivors Alliance office, be the change you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see in the world.
I like that.
Do that and focus on that. And if you can do that, Gandhi was phenomenal when he said that. When you can wrap your head around what that means, then you have created a second act. And then you will thrive. You will have no other option. the universe will not allow you to have any other option.
Amen, sister. You spoke it forward. Thank you, Miss Karen, today for being with us. You're just a beautiful person. We love what you and Judy are doing. For our listeners out there, you can find another interview that Judy and Sharon are both on with us talking about their mission with the Cancer Alliance and the upcoming convention for survivors next year in Nashville. So tune into that podcast as well to hear a little bit more about what they are doing to make a difference in their world.
And so,
thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Miss Karen, very, very much. We appreciate you.
Just remember, it's hey, y'all. Remember, you got a year to plan for. You got 99 days.
That's right. Well, we'll sign off by saying bye, y'all. And as Sharon and I always say, we are not just surviving, but thriving with you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.